Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Manicharian, joined by our producer, Justin Stein. And today we have a very special guest. We have an NFL player who I came into the league with as a rookie the same year that he did. It is Thomas Morstead. He's had a 14-year career. I think this is his 14th season in the NFL as a punter. He spent 12 years with the New Orleans Saints before kind of having a journeyman year last year. And now he has landed in Miami, where he's on the pursuit. And for those who don't know, Thomas Morstead has a unique relationship with the community of New Orleans. It's really on a different level from what you see in terms of New Orleans just being a small town where you can actually get to know the players on the team, the type of personality that Thomas has, and then also the longevity that he had around there. I spent my time as an intern first helping him out, working on his hands improving as he had to catch snaps out of the jugs machine. So we spent a lot of time together back in the day, and it was fun to have him back on to Off the Charts to chop it up today. So without further ado, here's my interview with Thomas Morstead. Thomas, welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. It's been way too long, but it's good to see you. How was your offseason?
It was great. It was great. I'm glad to be on here with you. It's been a long time. It's actually got me reflecting back to when we met. So it's been a long, long time, but I'm really glad to be here and excited to catch up a little bit.
You got some time with the family overseas, and now you're stranded in Miami on your own, I imagine.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough life. No, we had a great summer. You know, my parents are living in England right now. My mom's originally from there, and my dad grew up there. So we had a nice trip over with my four kids and my wife. Got to do a little sightseeing, went up to the farm and hung out with all of our extended family, my grandfather. And then we went to Ireland as well for a wedding on my dad's side of the family. And then did some sightseeing in Ireland. It's a nice trip. It was kind of good to disconnect and just kind of be with family. So it was great.
Nice. That sounds like a perfect way to spend the summer.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right. So as you mentioned, we got to know each other in the summer of 2009. We were both rookies coming into the New Orleans Saints. I would feed you balls from the jugs machine in pre-practice, and I would literally film your foot hitting the ball during practice. I would stand, I think, what was it, like 7 yards behind you and 4 yards to the left, something like that, for Coach McMahon, so we could get that on film every time. And that season would end with you attempting the most famous onside kick in Super Bowl history. Looking back on those times, I mean, what stands out to you about that time, and what stands out to you about that kick?
Oh, there's so much I could go into. I mean, number one, just the kick itself, getting to be a part of a gutsy, you know, gamble play like that in the Super Bowl, which was, a small part of helping us win the Saints and New Orleans' first and only Super Bowl title. As time goes on, it just gets more special to have been a part of that, be a part of that group. It was such a fun time. It was a magical experience being a rookie and getting to do that. It was just awesome. And, you know, there's so many things that stand out about that time being a part of every Sunday after every victory that, you know, we won 13 games in a row that season. It was like cheers every week. It was the same party, same places. It never got old. And we kind of were just partying with the city every week. And it was a great time. And it was a bit of a blur just being a rookie. You know, there's so much newness happening. It was just magic. That's the best way to put it. And I'm very grateful to have just gotten to experience that. And I think, as time goes on, you kind of learn to appreciate certain things that have happened in the past when you have a, you know, perspective that tells you how difficult it is to even get that opportunity. So,
yeah, it's kind of crazy. Now that you're with the Dolphins, it makes me think of Dan Marino going to the Super Bowl in 1984, 5,000-yard season, never going back. The Dolphins haven't been back since all that time. I know you guys were all trying to change that this year. You got that opportunity, and you got to see it through as a rookie. And it's like, oh, man, like, is it always this easy? Like, that was definitely a magical time.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because, you know, obviously we had a defense that just stole the ball every week that season. And Darren Sharper, who, you know, is obviously in jail and had some bad things that he's been a part of, or
shocking stuff.
Shocking stuff. I remember him telling me after we won the Super Bowl, he said, "Hey, you know, young buck, this don't happen every year." He was in his 14th season in the NFL, and he had gone as a rookie and it had taken till year 14 to get back. And I never forget that. And it's funny now that I'm back in Miami. I haven't been in that stadium since we walked off that field. I've never been back in that stadium, and I'm, you know, about to be playing home games there.
And it looks different now.
It does. They've done some pretty significant renovations to it, but it is just crazy how it's now year 14 for me. He was spot on with what he told me. So,
yeah, I'll never forget his secondary mate, Roman Harper, who, when you guys would all be eating your lunch in the middle of two-a-days during preseason, during training camp, he would hand me his playbook and allow me to just look through it while he was eating. And on the way back out, he said, "Any questions?" every day. And I would pick his brain about the nuances of cover six and trying to figure out, you know, what does this combo look mean here and all this kind of stuff there. And I swear I learned as much football there in that brief amount of time. I mean, you're sitting in meeting rooms with people and stuff like that, but just him giving me that book that helped a lot. And it was a real family atmosphere at that time.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I didn't know what normal was, and I probably still don't fully know what normal is. I spent so much time there in 12 years out of my 13 that I've played all there. So all you know is what you know. But especially that year, practices ended super early on Fridays. Guys were staying in on their own doing, you know, it was player led, player driven. Everything was player accountability with other players. Coaches just worried about coaching. They weren't fussing at anybody to do more. They were actually ending practices early to, you know, get guys off the field, and guys were, you know, just doing extra things as a big family. And it was really cool to be a part of and just see it. And hearing that story about Roman doesn't surprise me at all. It's great. He was a great teammate, but Roman could engage and talk with anybody. I felt like that guy knew everybody in the building, regardless of their job. So that's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah, man, there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for the peer leadership that was there on that team. When you look at Drew Brees on offense specifically and John Vilma on defense, and the way that they were like player coaches in a sense. But when you actually are a player, when you're actually one of the stud players, your words go a lot further, no matter who you are as a coach, I think, when it's amongst peers.
Yeah, look, I just adding on to that, I mean, I think back to that, and now that I have the perspective of it, and I got to see John Vilma for, you know, 4 years, and look, everybody knows Drew, right? But John Vilma, man, what a consummate professional, badass leader. I mean, it was awesome to watch him just every way that he handled everything, ultra competitive in everything he did. And it was about winning every single day. And that's, he was so focused on that, the results. It just was almost like you knew the results were going to be there, but he was so process focused on just being, and he was just an exceptional leader. He held everybody to such a high standard. It was just awesome to be around.
And smart, man, he was smart. He is smart. I mean, what a smart guy. So you mentioned that you've never had a real normal experience. And I think that's totally true, because your relationship with New Orleans, I think, is unlike anybody. Like we just mentioned Drew Brees. I even think your relationship with New Orleans is in a different stratosphere than Drew Brees is. Like Drew was in his own like Manning type relationship with the city of New Orleans. But I don't know if that there's a player more universally beloved by a city, and that just feels a connection to a player the way they do with you. Can you speak to that at all? Like what is that relationship like? Like you mentioned about how you would go out and you'd be amongst the people there. And that's a unique thing about New Orleans, but I'm just so curious to hear, what does that city mean to you and on that sort of relationship that you have?
Yeah. I mean, I never could have, you know, when I first started playing, I mean, that wasn't sort of like a motive of mine, was to like make this great relationship with the city. You know, I just got there and did my best. And then, you know, you start to not be so tunnel visioned on just your life, but you know, you start trying to, you start seeing other teammates and how they operate. You start, you know, extending and trying to be helpful and be a good teammate, be a good leader. You know, there's so much need in probably everywhere there's need, but but there's so much need in New Orleans. And so the Saints do a great job of giving guys opportunities to kind of get involved in different areas of need in that community. And I just tried to do what I could do when I could do it, and tried to make a motto of trying to always say yes, even maybe when I didn't feel like it. And honestly, it kind of felt like an obligation for, you know, and I know that sounds negative, but, you know, we get paid a lot of money to do a really, you know, we get paid a lot of money to play a kid's game. And it's an awesome living, and it's an awesome set of life experiences that you get from it, and you get great relationships. And I don't know, there's not a lot of negatives to it. I don't know. I just felt kind of like obligated that I should be doing something to try to give back and try to give it my time and lend my resources and my clout, whatever that means, to just help and do some good stuff. And I think some of the things that we did were very well received, and we had a lot of like ravenous volunteers that wanted to be a part of it. So we had a, I don't know, me and my wife both just were really blessed to be able to do all the stuff that we did and have be so well supported, you know. But I again, like I said, it was not some sort of end goal of having that happen. I just think being accessible and being kind of a part, you know, entrenching yourself in all that New Orleans has to offer and trying to go experience it all and being a part of it and kind of, you know, trying to become local, even though I'm not from there. It's kind of like people like, where are you from? It used to be, well, I'm from here, but I live here. And now I just say New Orleans, like, cause I feel like I'm from there now. And so, yeah, I don't know how that happened. It's not for everybody, but it's definitely for me and my family, even to this day, where, you know, that's home. You know, we can't say enough good things about it. And it's, you know, every bit of it's been sweet. And we just, we're very grateful to be a part of that community.
I think for a lot of people, it's easy to be negative about the world, but seeing the way that you relate, the way you give back, the way you make yourself accessible like that, which you say, it feels like an obligation to you, but that says so much more about you than it does about the connotations of the word obligation. You know what I mean? Like it's really special to see just the way you became part of the community. And can you say anything about the What You Give Will Grow Foundation in case people are interested in that at all?
Yeah, look, COVID really kind of put a damper on things for us, because we had a few major fundraisers that we did every year. And then we had a number of programs that we did with mainly sick kids. And so COVID kind of like made it to where we couldn't do either of those for a long time. And then I got released by the Saints. Our executive director has stepped away. So we're kind of in a transition period currently of exactly what we're going to do. And so I don't have a direction or a certain place for any action to be taken currently. I'm obviously not even living there in the fall. And so we're currently assessing, you know, what we're going to do. And so, you know, like I said, we're living there full time. I'm obviously in Miami for this fall, and we'll continue to do things. You know, one of the things I've tried to do is because of COVID and I felt like I was kind of you know, seen a lot in the city. Out of respect to Blake, who's the new punter there, I've tried to back into the shadows a little bit and kind of let him flourish. I think he's a talented kid that has a chance to be really good there for a long time. And so, you know, I've tried to not be as out there on social media. Just I'm rooting for him to do well. And so, you know, I've been a little quieter. And
yeah, so it's a little bit the calm before the storm right now. And
yeah,
that makes sense to me.
And I'm focusing on my stuff. You know, I don't feel like I'm done this year, but I'm certainly not on the front nine of my career. And so, you know, I'm extraordinarily focused on just having a great season and maxing out this experience while I can. And, you know, my wife and I would do our own thing in New Orleans personally and privately as well with some other stuff we're doing. So stay tuned. There we go.
Yeah, we'll stay on the lookout. All right, so let's get back to that career that you were talking about on the field, because last year must have been crazy. You were jobless in August. You signed with the Jets mid-September, released by the Jets in November, signed with the Falcons later that month, and then you went on to close the season out by winning NFC Special Teams Player of the Month in December. So, yeah, maybe not on the front nine of the career, but still got some good football to play. What was that roller coaster like?
It was exactly that. It was a roller coaster. it was very disappointing to not have the interest. You know, I had a really tough year in 2020. I had an injury. I had a vision issue. And, you know, you have a really tough year and you are 35 years old. And I think people just all thought I was done, washed up. And so I'm prouder of last season, just how I made a decision that I wasn't done and I wanted to give it a shot and there's no guarantees. And I just stayed ready. And when I got the opportunity, it was awesome just to be back in the building. And it was a new setting. It's quite rejuvenating in a number of ways. New people, new place, very exciting. Yeah, it was a roller coaster. And I learned a lot last year. I learned that being good at my age is not enough to stick around sometimes. You've got to find the right spot. I think, you know, in the case of New York, they were very transparent with me. I was coming there to fill in for Braden Mann, who they had drafted and who's actually a good friend of mine. I actually gave him a punting lesson when he was in seventh grade. So that was kind of a cool That's story. Crazy. And I respected that. I appreciated that they were kind of transparent with me about what the deal was. And I told him myself, I said, if I were you guys, I'd be high on Braden too. I mean, I think he's really talented and I'm looking forward to seeing him do really well this year. But, you know, so that was one situation. Then I went to Atlanta and got NFC Player of the Week my first week. And then the next month got Player of the Month in the NFC. And, you know, they're kind of, I know they won't say these words, but, you know, I don't know what a synonym for a rebuild is, but they're, you know, they're in a different spot. I think if they think they're going to be good in a few years, you know, I'll be 38 or 39 by then. And, you know, it's harder to pay somebody at this position when you know you're still a few years away. So I was very grateful to Terry Fontenot for giving me that chance to keep it going and keep my foot in the door.
Another former teammate of ours with the Saints.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was nice. And I really enjoyed Art Smith there. The head coach was just phenomenal to me. You know, as I know Saints fans don't like to hear me talking nice about Falcons, but
yeah, it's rough.
They really treated me well.
Hey, imitation is the highest form of flattery. And what are the Falcons if they're not imitating the Saints right now? Huh?
There you go. There you go. So anyways, it was a roller coaster, but even there, I mean, I certainly had the opportunity to go back there, but it just was, you know, I didn't feel like the team was extending enough to, you know, and I don't blame them. They're, you know, they're a few years away. Why pay an older guy when they're not quite yet? And so I just realized that last season, really, I need to be very thoughtful about the opportunity that I, if I have multiple options, is about where can I go where I think I have a chance to win. And if I can go perform well, play well, be a good leader on the team and do all the things that they would hope that I would be bringing to the team, that maybe there's a chance of past just 1 year if they're winning now and if they're trying to win now. So I feel like that opportunity was in Miami. So I'm super excited about it. And my kids are excited. My wife's excited. You know, I'm sitting in my new condo that we've rented for the fall. And so it'll be hopefully lots of good fun times for everybody.
Yeah, man. So, yeah. So you're down there, reunited with Frank Smith, the offensive coordinator there. He was an offensive assistant back in the day under Aaron Cromer on the offensive line. Mike McDaniels, the head coach, is known for his unique persona. Certainly, you got all this stuff to be excited about. But even though Mike McDaniels is known for his persona, he's probably not the most philosophical coach that you've ever played for. And I want to give you the opportunity to talk about him because I know he means a lot to you. What lessons from your college coach, Frank Yance, stick with you to this day?
So many things. You know, if there's one person that I can look to that's been just the strongest professional connection I've had to my success in my life, it's got to be Frank. I only had a year with him, but he meant so much to me and still does to this day. So many things I learned about being a pro from him and a pro in life, just about how to live. And he did it. He was a model of it. What you give will grow. That was one of his sayings that he put to us, and what you keep you lose. And that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but it's kind of a mentality about how you go about your business and about how you go about treating people. And, you know, I just see it as everybody you come in contact with, you know, you should invest into them if you can, whether it's 10 seconds, 10 minutes or 10 hours. And just, you know, he just did that. Everybody that he came in touch into contact with, he was somebody that it's like being in a fraternity. If you knew Frank, like that's a fraternity. Everybody has a special bond that knew Frank. I wish so many people in my life today, I feel bad that they didn't get to work with Frank or know him. And he's just been, he's somebody that I still think about. I carry my notebooks in my backpack here of all of his sayings. And
what's the name of that little book? I remember that.
Well, it's there's no name to it. It's just a few people at SMU put this book together of all kind of the stuff that we had gone over in these meetings for a year. They just kind of put all their highlights of quotes, sayings, tackling technique, fundamentals in kick coverage, punt coverage. And they just kind of put it all into a book. And it's kind of like a little summary of the way they viewed his, a lot of the most important things that he had given us. And I still carry that around with me. It's got a little picture on the front of it with him looking back, coaching me at a practice. I don't know. I just can't say enough about that experience and how good he was to me. People always ask, like, how did he teach you to punt? And I'm like, he never once coached me how to punt. he coached me how to live and how to treat people right and how to create value and how to pour into people. And he did that by doing it himself. And everybody that knew Frank, man, everybody is, like I said, it's just a fraternity of people that are all of these people are doing special things. That he had 1 year at SMU, and from my class through the next 5 years of guys that all were in that team meeting with him every day. You know, we were a one-win team my junior year, one-win team my senior year when we had Frank. And all of, from that class, I was drafted. Then the next year, there were a few guys drafted. And then 2 years later, there's like six guys drafted. And they all came from that crew of people. And I think there's probably seven guys that have played for more than a decade from that SMU team.
That's crazy.
And I point back to that. It's not that we just had this fluky amount of talent that came in there, because it's not like we were winning 10 games a year. It was all those guys that got prepared for life by Frank. They have all had exceedingly awesome careers, and it's been cool to be a part of that.
That's awesome. Cool to hear the sort of impact he can have. Hey, I know we're running over time. I know you're maniacal about recovery.
You're good. You're good. Right. I got time for you, man. I got time for you.
We can go through the lightning round here, if you will. I'm going to ask you your opinion on analytics, because that tends to be the hot button on this podcast. But before I do, I will point out that despite having fewer punts than most punters last year, you were still tied for eighth in the NFL in our player value metric for punters, punting total points. And on a per punt basis, only the Raiders' AJ Cole was more efficient. So with that in mind, that total points likes you, what's your opinion on analytics?
I mean, I think it's a great stat. I think every team should measure that. Sounds like. No, look, I think it's cool. I'm a numbers guy. I was an engineering student, and the only reason I was an engineering student is because I was a math guy. So I'm big into analytics. I'm always looking at, you know, new ways of perceiving information. And yeah, I think it's cool that you guys have a metric. There's a few metrics I've seen out there. I know PFF has their punter grades, and I have a rough idea of how they do them. And then I know there's a group of kids that are from these Ivy League schools called the Punt Runts. You'll have to look them up. They have Punalytics. And
yeah, I've seen Punalytics. Yeah.
And I think I finished fourth in Punalytics last year. So yeah, they have a unique way of kind of having a points above expected, and it's all relative to, it's not relative to anybody from 10 years ago or 30 years ago. It's all relative to everybody that's punting this year and the field position that they're punting from and what the average would get in a net. So yeah, I'm into it. I think it's a great, it's been a tool for me when I've negotiated contracts in the past. And I know I'm glad to hear that AJ was at the top of y'all's marks, because if anybody tells you that anybody was better than AJ last year, I'd have a hard time believing that. You go put his film on, he really, really had a special year. So props to him, because he's just, I'll be honest, when I first saw him, I said, well, he's talented, but he mechanically, I didn't know if he'd ever kind of iron out his swing. And he's gotten, every year, all he's done is gotten better and better and better. And who knows what the limit is, but it's cool to see him having success because the kid has worked his ass off. Man, he's an exceptional player in this league.
So I'll tell you, the thing that jumps out when we look into your own numbers, like you mentioned, your 2020 season was a rough year for you. I think if you just looked at the raw numbers, you might not really perceive that. Sure, the gross average was down to 43.1. That was the lowest of your career. But the net average was at 42.3, which is pretty good. You know, most people would take that in most years. I think when you look a little deeper into the numbers, you see that your fair catch percentage was up at 47% this year. So I think you knew that you probably didn't have the oomph that you usually have. And it seems like you were trying to air it out a little bit more.
Well, I just played the game differently because I was not 100% healthy. And, you know, we had two good gunners. And so I just said, okay, you know, I'm going to have to live in a different world this year and in 2020. And I did my best to survive. You know, if you were to compare the first half of my season with the second half, you could tell I was physically feeling better as the season went along because I did have a lot, you know, I think I performed much better in the back half of that season.
Yeah.
You know, when I say it was a rough year, my A ball that year, especially early in the season, was just not even close to what I think an A ball needs to be in the NFL. I'm talking just bare minimum. I'm not talking comparing myself to previous years of myself. It was just, I just could not get through a ball and it showed. But I was proud of myself for kind of surviving through it. Shout out Craig Robertson for keeping me encouraged throughout that whole season because I just was, you know, it's when you don't have your tools, it's just really hard to stay positive. And he did that for me throughout that entire season. That's why it was so rewarding last year to get that opportunity and be ready and be healthy and go out and do my thing. So it was cool.
And the numbers reflect exactly what you said for what it's worth. 2 points earned in that first game against Tampa Bay. You had a great game there. Then from that point through the meat of the season is when you were dealing with things and it got rough. But then you closed out with 2 points earned also against Philadelphia and Kansas City for finishing up the season against Carolina. So those three games are really good. Allowed a grand total of 8 return yards on 17 punts for about a 48-yard average. So I think you take that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. And you know what? We did some good things, right? Like we led the league in fair catches and we broke the NFL record on least punt return yards allowed in the season ever. So that was really kind of a cool, you know, feather in our cap as a unit.
You're spot on in terms of your self-evaluation though, because total points would tell you were in double digits in total points earned every season since 2016, except that one. And that's since the beginning of kind of the total point system, which by the way, I'll take a minute to point out, incorporates all of that stuff that Punalytics did and then more. It's starting with your field position. It's starting with your expected opponent's field position based on that kick. It's incorporating the hang time. It's incorporating the coverage. There's tons that goes into it that we can nerd out on at a different time. But I told you this was the lightning round. So who else along with AJ Cole would you have put along the top tier last year of the punters in the NFL? Can I put you on the spot like that?
Last year? Well, look, number one, it was a rough, when I say rough, it was a bit of a roller coaster year for me. So as far as me being able to, normally the amount of film that I watch and other guys, it's kind of in a different place last year. So it's hard to say that I kept up with AJ just because he was having such an impressive statistical year. And so I was watching a lot of his stuff. You know, a guy that I think doesn't get enough credit is Tress Way up in Washington. He's not technically how I would coach somebody to do it, but he has really become a very, very good pro and he's got his own, you know, technique of how he does it. And he's very coordinated about doing that. That's a guy that I think, you know, it's not just the stats. He gets a few turnovers every year. His ball is hard to catch sometimes with the way the ball falls. He's a lefty. And so I think he does a good job. You know, some young guys that I think have the juice to be really good. I wouldn't necessarily say they had their best seasons last year, but Jack Fox and Jake Bailey in New England are both guys that I think when they're on, they're just really special when they're on.
Those are all guys that were in the top 10 of our metrics last year in terms of punting. So you're spot on there. And Jack Fox specifically, 14 points earned last year, 15 the year before that. He's somebody that really stands out on our metrics. I mean, he can just boom the thing.
He's got a big, big cannon of a leg. Yeah. How about the kid down in Jacksonville? I know he had an injury last year, but he's a guy that to me has been pretty impressive as well.
Logan Cook also in the top 10 there. You've named them all. And your buddy in New Orleans, you mentioned before, Blake Elikin, 83 punts last year, led the NFL, which is, you know, not always the best thing from a team perspective, but certainly lots of opportunities there. He had a nice season. Brian Anger had a nice season, somebody who's been around for a while as well.
All right, that's a guy that I'm missing. I thought Brian had a special year last year.
Third on our list. So,
okay, very cool. I knew I was missing somebody. His playoff game that they lost was incredible. I think it was against San Francisco.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch him play in that game.
It's funny to hear how spot on you are. You're like, I'm not sure. I didn't follow as much film as usual. And then you just banged off like the entire top 10 list in the NFL.
Cool.
So not bad by you. All right. What sort of thing would a perfect punting stat take into account? Like, what do you think that's impossible to take into account that we do? Is it the touch-to-toe time? Is it what is it?
I think it's intention of the punter.
That's pretty tough.
Yeah, guys get asked to do different things, and guys make, you know, I remember having a punt last year in Buffalo. It was snowing. I was sick and just felt horrible for the game. And I hit a ball into the wind, into the snow. A returner was playing me pretty head up. And I just hit a low line drive ball that I was like, if I can get this ball directed properly to hit the ground, we're playing on a little bit of ice, this ball is just going to skirt out. And I think it was a 40-yard ball, maybe 38 or 42. I can't remember exactly. But it was one of those balls where you come over and the coach is like, hey, what happened there? And they're not mad because the result was good, but it doesn't look pretty. And I said, what happened is exactly what I tried to make happen. I didn't ask your permission because I just knew it was the best call, you know, best play for
you. You got those stripes, so you can do that.
Yeah, so it's just sometimes judging intentions of what guys do. And you know, I think there's some guys that are, you just can't measure. You can't measure that because no one's going to tell you half the time whether they meant to do something or not. You know, obviously, a ball that's a nice, you know, 5 second hang time that's caught on the stripe out of bounds for 50 yards. You knew the guy was trying to do that. And that's an A+ play, and it's easy to grade and know that. You know, I think that's it's hard to just measure intention.
I think back to all the times you and Courtney Roby had like a whole different language that you guys would speak to each other before you punted the ball that I think would completely be indecipherable. You know, I don't care about the Rosetta Stone, aliens, whatever. Like, so I think I've seen it. I've seen it with my own eyes. So I believe you.
Yeah. And I think that's been I think that's my mind has been something that's set me apart as far as the other aspects of the game. It's not just having a good golf swing. It's knowing your way around a course and taking control and taking accountability of your own career. And it doesn't mean I'm doing things that coach isn't asking me to do. It's having a different level of energy and a different level of communication with the people that you depend on, that you're codependent on to get things done. And I've been fortunate to have so many good relationships with so many gunners over the years of us realizing that we butter each other's bread, so to speak, and getting guys to understand that. And once they do, I've had a lot of just great relationships, and I'm certain that's been a key to my success, is just knowing what to expect from each other and how we're going to play that game together. And that's the fun part about this game. There's so much other stuff that goes into all this. And it's about, you know, just having those good relationships with these guys and being able to communicate after a play on the sideline and say, hey, if you get this again, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And when you start speaking the same language, you can really be special. And like I said, even with my down year a few years ago, we've finished in the top 10 net punting every year since my rookie year. So it's pretty cool to say that.
Yeah, man. Timo, thank you so much for taking the time, for being so giving. And I think that all the listeners will be super fascinated to hear all the things that you talked about today. I really thank you so much. Appreciate everything that you meant to me in the early years of my career. Hopefully we do it again before too long.
Let's do it. I need you guys to send me your algorithm so I can study it and give you some feedback.
Yeah, man. We'll let you tell us what we're doing wrong.
No, it sounds like you guys are doing a good job. So I'm just interested to hear how you think about it.
Sounds good. I'll take you up on that.
Perfect. All right, Matt. Thanks so much for having me. You got it.
Appreciate you.
If you enjoyed this interview with Thomas Morstead, then you have to check out the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast, where the host Mark Simon regularly has on major league players, including within the past year, Byron Buxton, Hunter Renfroe, Matt Chapman, Jeremy Pena, and of course, he's regularly joined by former major leaguer and current VP of baseball at SIS, Bobby Scales. Don't miss the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast. For Justin Stein and Thomas Morstead, I'm Matt Manicharian. Keep your eyes out on the 33rd team. The 33rd team, that's Mike Tannenbaum and Joe Banner's company. They're a think tank for football. And we've got some exciting news coming out on the front of how SIS will be working with the 33rd team going forward. So keep your eyes out on that. Keep your eyes out on the 33rd team. Keep your eyes on the SIS Twitter, because we have some exciting announcements coming up as we head into August.